Michael, welcome back to Karma.
Yeah, good to be with you, Karma Mob.
The bill to amend the Native Title Act. Again, we're seeing a federal government tinker with the edges of hard-fought laws that have been put in place, but apparently don't work too well for governments.
We knew they made a lot of mistakes in their rage to do things, but what they don't realise now, and I think they don't really give a damn, is the fact that to amend this Native Title Act in the way that they're amending it, so that they say that only the majority of Aboriginal people who are claimant groups sign an Eora contract now makes it legal. And, you know, my argument is that this is a complete interference with Aboriginal customary law because, you know, each clan group in a nation have the right to say no, and they've always done.
The lack of understanding of how different mobs work across the country, the fact that Aboriginal and Islanders are all thrown into the one basket without the proper understanding of nations of peoples within a nation. It's something that there's a distinct lack of understanding or need to know what they're doing.
This exposes one of the great ironies as a nation. They've still never bothered to learn how our people operate. They don't understand the political structures within Aboriginal society. They don't understand the decision-making processes. And they don't know nothing of our law and culture. And this is an indictment against a system who's just isolated us out there thinking that, you know, we were going to die off and there would be no one left. And now, you know, they're running into all sorts of obstacles. Like, this is only a minor obstacle compared with what's to come yet in terms of their right to govern Aboriginal people. If they succeed in getting this these amendments through the Parliament and they somehow get it into law, then I will be making an immediate application to the High Court for an immediate hearing to say that this here law actually violates Aboriginal law and custom.
That doesn't appear to have bothered government too much in the past.
No, but they've never been challenged either on Aboriginal law and culture. And this, if you look at Mabo, Mabo said that Aboriginal law and culture survived British sovereignty. So that places it then into a position where it supports what the High Court said. When the High Court said, well, you know, Aboriginal law and culture is not a construct of the British common law, but that the common law now recognises it. So now that the common law recognises it, it gives us equal footing, our law and culture, in terms of the legal position. And so if a Parliament then interferes with our law and culture without our consent, then we have a very good argument in the High Court of Australia. A very good argument. And we can strike down that law because this is our law and culture. And when you're existing and you're asserting that this is a sovereign position and our law and culture survives pretty sovereignty, and there's no treaties to say otherwise that we've evolved our law to allow our law to coexist with them and that they can make laws for it, the High Court, this is the basic fundamental argument that we will be putting up to say our law and culture prevails in this country because it is the continental common law of this country and that has never been taken away from us and we've never, ever ceded it.
On the basis that even if there was a challenge, Michael, and you said that you thought you would have a very good case, what other avenues would be available internationally to challenge the government?
There is none. The United Nations have already made it very clear in 2011 that Australia is in fact in violation of international law. When John Howard amended the Native Title Act in 1998, in 2000 the United Nations condemned Australia and put them on the early warning list because they had violated international law and there's a threat to the continued culture of the Aboriginal peoples and Aboriginal people generally when they amended that. And when they amended it, John Howard amended it to change one part of the Mabo Act. And that was the Mabo decision said that they gained a radical title, but they did not gain a beneficial radical title, and in brackets, in the decision, it had a lodial. So that meant that if they didn't have the lodial title and they didn't get a beneficial radical title, that is, they could use our land because that was owned by us. That's what John Howard suspended the Racial Discrimination Act to give the states a beneficial right, which went right across the decision in the High Court where they said they did not gain a beneficial radical title. So what John Howard did was that he facilitated a law and a change in the statute to give the states powers to take away our rights under state legislation and territory legislation. And nobody's ever challenged that. And we are getting to a point now where we're going to have to challenge every aspect of that Native Title Act on every section and what they're doing. And I think we've got a very good chance of winning, because it is all racially discriminatory. Our problem is that we got lawyers who are on the money trail. You know, these blokes are just riding the gravy train, and they're not going to rock the boat. You know, they're getting a very big, getting all sorts of reputations. You know, as the most concerning lawyers in the world. You know, because they, you know, all they're doing is just riding the Aboriginal land rights gravy train, Native Title gravy train, and making money for themselves. These blokes are not going to challenge the system because it possibly puts them out of a job. The other thing is that these Native Title services and TBC, the private body corporates, you know, it's all about money. It's not about anything else. It's not about Aboriginal people and our culture. And so what we got to do now, those of us who are standing up and fighting this fight, we have to take this on our own. And like I say, Australian lawyers, they're worth anything, really, when it comes to fighting Aboriginal rights, because all they're doing is getting them to sign off on things, and they know that it's illegal. Like, you know, those ILUAs are only private contracts. And, you know, they're entering into private contracts for people to say that, you know, local government decisions, if you look at some of those ILUAs, local government actions in the future are to be classified as past acts. How can you say that a future development program is to be classified as a past act? And they do that simply because they don't want to get people, the local governments and any other developer, to have to pay compensation or negotiating with for money for royalty. And, you know, Aboriginal people are signing this, and you've got lawyers advising them of this. That's just absolute legal and criminal negligence for them to do it. And these people are, in fact, there's no duty of care in terms of their responsibility to their clients.
What about Aboriginal and Islander lawyers?
Well, the thing is that they, you know, the first thing they look at is, oh, gee, what about my reputation? You know, I'm committed to the bar. That's why I never stayed with it. I'm committed to the bar, and I have to observe the rules of the bar. And so the rules of the bar manipulates their mindset so that they don't go too far outside of the little square box that they've been taught to work in. But our people need to now understand that it's do or die, really. If we don't stand on this one and have a crack at this one, well, then she's all over.
Gilar Michael Anderson, thanks for joining us.
Catch you later, mate.